The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order state and local government operations reform, technology, and elections. The first bill on the agenda is Representative Bunn. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the committee report for House File 3392.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion prevails. Representative Bunn, I'm going to move that House File 3392 be passed and be re-referred to finance. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. In the last committee, we reduced this to only two sections. The purpose of this bill was to address an issue that originated in Washington County but may become an increasing problem throughout our state, and that over the last many years, our county commissioners have reduced funding for extension and ultimately for 4-H. About 10 years ago, it was almost $500,000, and as of this last year, they were going to zero all of it out. They had already discontinued Master Gardeners, and then more recently, we're going to eliminate 4-H. 4-H is an essential aspect of support for youth in our community. Over 500 youth are participating. It's essential for the support of our county fair. The executive director and president of the Washington County Agriculture Society and other members related to 4-H came to us to ask to look for flexible funding options or a solution to this problem going forward. Over the interim, we explored a number of ideas, had meetings in the county, had meetings here at the Capitol with all the various stakeholders, with the Dean of Extension, with people with the County Fair Association, etc. Came up with a list of 9 or 10 possible ideas to explore. We reduced that as we came into the session to 4 that we thought were feasible at this time. That's now been reduced to the 2 before you. The 2 before you are 2 ideas, again, to add this flexibility to help them find alternative funding sources in these difficult times as we go forward. The first one of most relevance to your committee is having to do with allowing cities and town and townships to contribute to 4-H programs. Currently, because of a 1941 AG Attorney General's Office opinion, city councils and townships believe they could not make contributions to this organization, and so needed this authority to be able to do so. And then Section 2 has to do with allowing these 4-H organizations not only to charge activity fees based on materials and aspects of that particular activity, but also to charge general participant fees for participation in the organization. Again, this was to provide some flexibility going forward. I have with me today one testifier, the executive director of our Washington County Ag Society, who could speak further to the reasoning and the importance of having Section 1 in this bill, if you would like him to speak.
Discussion to the bill. Representative Biscay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, on line 1.11, just for clarity purposes, is it your intention that the policy that will be developed by the Extension Services would actually mandate the charging of fees, or would the policy allow for the flexibility to charge for fees?
Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Buskins, and we discussed this briefly in the last committee. This section in line 1 mandates the Extension Service to develop a policy, but in section 1.11, it then authorizes the 4-H programs to charge a fee, a participant fee, if impose one if they would like, but it's discretionary. It does not mandate any fees. It only mandates that a policy be formulated and that they are authorized to do so if they wish.
Then, Mr. Chair and Representative Bunn, as this moves forward, I wonder if it wouldn't be prudent to insert after the word authorizing and before the word participation the word discretionary.
Representative Bunn, we have Ms. Dyson here. She may want to
interpret. Mr. Chair and Representative Buskins, we can check with Ms. Dyson's on the particular word or how to do it, but I am perfectly would accept that as a friendly amendment to the bill to provide further clarification if that word works.
Yes, and the operative phrase is works.
Yeah. Yep.
Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Buskins, it might work. My understanding of this sentence was that it was authorizing the participant fees, that the authorization is that they be used to provide the educator, that was what was discretionary. Mm-hmm. Not, imposing fees was discretionary, but that it was tied to providing those fees for the educator in that county. Is that
Representative
what was intended?
Well, currently it's not clear in state law that they can charge fees at all, participant fees. So it was partly authorizing them to do so, and that if they did so, it would be used for this purpose.
Okay.
So, Ms. Dyson, inserting the word discretionary there, what does it really do?
Mr. Chair, I guess it reemphasizes that it's authorizing the fees. I mean, it says it's authorizing the fees. It doesn't say that the policy requires them to impose fees. So,
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair, we are going to at least two more committees. So if we could just work with Ms. Dyson in the next day or so about clarifying language so we make sure there's no that the intent is very clear, we'd be glad to do that.
All right. So Representative Biskins withdraws his amendment. You have nothing out there?
I never made a motion.
This is one of those.
Let's talk about it.
Okay.
Representative Bunn, does your testifier feel compelled to say something?
I would like him to underscore one point about why we went this direction on Section 1.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm David Olson. I'm the Executive Director of the Washington County Fair, we're very concerned about 4-H funding. 4-H is an important part of the county fair. The county fair has been around for 100 years. 4-H has been around for 100 years. At the fair, 8 out of 12 buildings are occupied by 4-H activities with animals, displays, projects. It's a lot of our draw for the, especially the younger families, to get out to the fair and see the farm animals and the science projects that the 4-H youth in the county have developed. When the county first started discussing eliminating funds for 4-H, we had a number of people go up and testify to the commissioners how important 4-H was. We had a number of the cities in Washington County send representatives who also sent resolutions from their city councils stating what an important piece of the county and the community that 4-H was, and that it really needed to be continued to be funded. The county commissioners came back and said, well, if you think it's so important, you fund it. These councils did, some of them did actually approve funds, but they did run afoul of this attorney general opinion that said they could not fund. We're not looking at large amounts of money from the cities. We're actually not looking at anywhere near enough to run the program. But, you know, every dollar that we can raise in any other source takes that burden off of our youth from having to fundraise that directly. Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3392 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Representative Hawes. Representative Hawes, we can think of no other place than the General Register to send your bill. Has anyone else requested it?
Some people opposing it have suggested some other areas, but I wasn't wanting those places.
All right. Representative Hawes, I'm going to move that House File 3287 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. Representative Hawes, to your
back. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a delete all amendment, DE2.
All right. I will move the DE2 amendment. Before we take action on it, why don't you tell us what it does, since it's a delete everything?
It addresses, it is the evolution of this bill from the Senate side. It emphasizes the importance of the ask. It emphasizes that it only applies for a reasonable distance, that costs have to be comparable. It defines reasonable policies. It gives a grandfathered in date of enactment. It has a may suggest for a listing of the hotels and motels on a central register, gives a progressive report for February 5th, and also an effective date.
Members, out of courtesy to the sponsor, I'm going to renew my motion on the DE2 so that the bill is put in order. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So now to the bill as amended.
Thank you very much. The bill simply says that if there's a comparable choice that the state will choose to spend dollars for state meetings and travel in places that have adopted a clean hotel policy. This is a setting of an example, and the bill has come from the implementation of network being established by the Minnesota Department of Health to implement a state five-year sexual violence prevention plan. We have with us testifiers today and their organizations that are supporting this bill, and then I believe that there will be testifiers opposing to it. Giving testimony will be Donna Mark, Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault Executive Director, and Frank Jewell, Minnesota Action Network co-director, and also present in the audience is Carolyn Palmer, an attorney for the coalition. Thank you. And to that.
And who would you like to have first?
I'll start. All right.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski and members of the committee. My name is Donna Dunn. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. We represent a statewide network of 70 sexual violence victim services advocacy programs across the state of Minnesota. MNCASA supports House File 3287 and the proposal to establish preference for purchasing in-state travel and meeting services from facilities that offer clean hotel environments. In addition to our work with the bill's author, we have worked over the past 2 years with the Policy and Legislative Action Team, which is a community advisory group convened by the Minnesota Department of Health, to help implement the state's five-year sexual violence prevention plan. We've also worked over the past year with our own public policy committee to develop this proposal. According to a recent Minnesota Department of Health study, 61,000 Minnesotans are victims of sexual violence in a year. The department describes this problem of sexual violence as being endemic. In other words, it's not an epidemic. It isn't peaking up to a new high, but it is a normal rate of incidence in the state of Minnesota. This has become the norm in Minnesota, and we're not comfortable with that. Changing a public health issue and problem of this proportion is no easy task. We can't simply prosecute or imprison our way out of this problem. We can't simply keep educating potential victims and hope they will beat the odds and be able to stop sexual violence or avoid sexual violence. We also need to challenge and change those social practices that contribute to this problem of sexual violence, and especially those that have become so widespread that they seem to be accepted as norms or viewed as intractable. In recent years, we have seen an emergence of research that has identified a strong correlation between consumption of violent and degrading sexually explicit material and attitudes and aggressive behaviors that can lead to sexual violence. That correlation has been shown. As one researcher, Ed Donnerstein, observed, the relationship between such material and subsequent aggression is, quote, much stronger statistically than the relationship between smoking and lung cancer, unquote. Well, the Clean Hotels Initiative is just one way that we can work at breaking this link and to have an impact on preventing sexual violence. This isn't a new state program, but rather an effort to establish a practice of asking the question, are you a clean hotel? And enabling state agencies and employees the option to choose to take the state's business to places that have stepped up to be part of a solution to sexual violence. We recognize that this is something the state cannot do alone. We're working with others to become partners in implementing the state's five-year sexual violence prevention plan. We're working with businesses, including partners in the host industries, individual citizens, and civic groups. But we need the state to step forward with leadership in adopting policies for clean hotel purchasing preferences. In closing, I would like to say we recognize the challenge of breaking through the noise and agitation that gets triggered with talking about a policy such as this. But sexual violence is a serious public health issue. 61,000 Minnesotans victimized in a year with an $8 billion economic impact. Members of this legislature know full well the cost of dealing with the problem after the harm has been done. House File 3287 is a no-cost step that the state can take toward keeping the harm from happening in the first place and toward making prevention of sexual violence a priority in Minnesota. Thank you, Chairman Pawlowski, and members for your time. I would be happy to respond to questions if you have any at this time or later.
All right, why don't we let the testifiers go, and then we can take questions when they're finished. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Representative Pawlowski and members of the committee, my name is Frank Jewell. I'm the executive director of Men's Peacemakers in Duluth and co-director of the Minnesota Men's Action Network. The reason for my testimony while supporting this is also to give you an example of how this might work. The Minnesota Men's Action Network, were organizing a conference last fall, and as a result of our work on the issue of sexual violence, we felt, and the consideration about clean hotels, we thought we ought to move forward on asking the question, is this a clean hotel? We asked that of all of the conference places that we were going to use. None of them were a clean hotel. But Cragen's, on hearing the information that about clean hotels, the effect of the environment on sexual violence and its impact, were willing to consider becoming a clean hotel. And Dutch Cragen actually made the decision prior to our conference to get rid of pay-for-view porn in his conference center and hotel. This was, had an effect on their business, but he said in conversation with us that he really felt that it was good for the people who came to use their facility. We know that the industry, porn industry, is a gigantic industry. It has very real impact, as Donna has already said. And if we're going to change this, if we're not going to keep simply incarcerating people, we are going to have to start working ahead of the problem upstream and stopping what in the environment supports this sexual violence. As a men's organization, we know that men are one of the major consumers of this. And as a men's organization, we think it's important that we step up working with MnCASA to act to make a difference in this area. And we ask that you support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Haas, did you have anyone else that needs to testify for the bill?
I do not.
All right. Then I have at least one more individual on my list. Dave Siegel. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dave Siegel. I'm the president and CEO of Hospitality Minnesota, and that's an umbrella organization for the state's Lodging Association, Resort and Campground Association, and Restaurant Association. And we are here to urge you today not to pass this legislation.
Just, Mr. Siegel, just before you start, you realize there's a delete everything amendment, so you're speaking to the delete everything.
I'm speaking to the delete all amendment.
So it's clear that that's...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
You're welcome.
Even as constructed, it presents challenges to us both practically and philosophically. We have gained an understanding over the last week of this issue raised by the authors of the bill and the advocacy community, and we appreciate that very much. What is concerning to us is that the community never approached us on this issue for a dialogue or a discussion or a conversation. We really have not had the opportunity to engage in a sit-across-the-table conversation about this very serious challenge. We need the opportunity to better understand the issue. We need the opportunity to review the research. And we really need an opportunity to engage in a productive dialogue. And why is it that we have to turn to legislation right away, first thing, before we talk to the affected industry. So my request today of you is not to pass the legislation and essentially to remand it back to industry and the advocacy community and the providers of the service to have a good conversation. We do have tools to communicate with the industry. We have a lot of opportunities and a lot of ways we could engage in that conversation. And in my experience, the change that occurs in that situation is real and not mandated. And I think Cragin's is a perfect example. As they learned about the issue and became aware of it, they made the decision at a financial cost to the hotel, I might add, they made the decision to no longer continue to provide the service. We know that in the St. Cloud area, the vast majority of hotels do not provide these channels. In fact, we're only aware of one out of 12 or 13 that do. So obviously, the community norms have spoken, and those operators have made that decision. It's also clear that the vast majority of pornography is not viewed in hotel rooms. It's viewed over the Internet. And this really doesn't address that issue at all. Certainly, changing the public's view of violent pornography is indeed, as was stated, a massive task, and proponents ought to use all of the public relations tools available to them, and we'd be happy to be supportive in that effort. But to use our industry as the platform, which will have a negative impact on the industry, an industry that's already reeling from the recession, is really unfortunate. Just a couple key pieces about the financial impact of this and why this essentially operates as a mandate. Most hotels have a 5 to 7 year contract with the providers of this service. The service comes in and says, we'll put in wiring, we'll put in the equipment, we'll do so at no cost or very low cost for you in exchange for a long-term contract and the ability to offer the pay-per-view channels, both standard movies and adult entertainment, to your guests. One of our hotel chains in Rochester, it's a major hotel chain, went back to the providers and said, given this legislation, can we get out of our contract? And the provider said, absolutely not. Or, sure, if you want to compensate us for the lost revenue that we're not going to gain by not being able to provide these channels. And that can be upwards of $2,000 to $3,000 a month, which is a pretty significant financial implication for the hotel industry. Many hotels, as I said, have already made the decision to move in the direction that this legislation goes. And I think that as this industry gains awareness and as the conversation occurs and as new technology becomes available that unbundles some of these services, you're likely to see more hotels move in that direction. For our hotels, this isn't really a big money maker, but it does become, under this legislation, a cost center for the operation. If you tell a hotel that the choice is between government business or breaking these long-term contracts, you're putting that operator in an extraordinarily difficult position. The proponents will tell you it's not a mandate. They'll tell you it's all about asking the question. And if that's what we desire, then why don't we mandate that the question be asked? But let's remove the penalty. If what we're about here is asking the question, then let's ask the question. But let's remove the penalty. Mr. Chairman and members, I would ask that you not pass this legislation today. Let a healthy conversation begin with our industry, with the advocacy groups, and with the providers of the service. Thank you.
Discussion. Representative Simon.
Thank you. Just a quick question for Mr. Siegel. Do you know roughly what percentage of current lodging facilities would meet the standard in here?
Mr. Siegel.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't know the answer to that. One of the challenges with this legislation is that it's targeted toward sexually violent pornography. The problem is when you have one of these services coming into your hotel, you don't know which of the 62 movies in the array of movies that are being shown would or would not meet this criteria, and who's going to make that judgment? You know, is the staff going to sit there and watch 62 of these movies and try to decide whether they are or are not sexually violent? You can't do that. So the end result is you simply have to take the service out of your facility.
Representative Murrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is a question for Mr. Siegel as well. I'm looking at lines 1.25 and following over to line 2.2. And Mr. Siegel, I think you talked about existing contracts and concerns with interference with existing contracts. I see the language here allows for lodging at establishments that are under contract, provided that they have a policy that would be implemented within 36 months.
Right.
Is your concern, Mr. Siegel, that the 36 months is too short?
I believe that...
Mr. Siegel.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, members. I do believe that is too short. If a hotel recently entered into a 5 or 7 year contract, they're going to be facing 2 to 5 years of time during which they have to make this choice between government business or these channels or the penalty that they're going to face from the provider. And that's, to me, an inappropriate or certainly unfortunate circumstance of this legislation.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be for Representative Hawes. Representative Hawes, I know that you're still working on the legislation as well.
Yes.
I'd invite you to at least consider a possible change, and I'm not going to suggest an amendment right now, that would allow for establishments that are under contract as of the date of the enactment to be able to complete the contract without penalty. The 36 months might be too specific a figure, given what Mr. Siegel's testimony is.
Members,
Mr.
Chair. The motion is to send this to the General Register. So, Representative Haas, where's the Senate bill right now?
The Senate bill,
floor.
I think it's gone to a second committee.
Floor.
I'm told it's gone to the floor.
It's on the floor. And does the Senate bill contain the delete everything amendment you just put on?
This is the Senate bill.
This is the Senate bill. Just as a point of fact, members. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, what is the definition of public funds? And specifically, does it include federal funds? Does it include funds from foreign governments?
I'm going to have Mr. Shepard handle that one. So, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, first of all, are you looking at a version of the bill that uses the term public funds still?
All right. Is it out of the delete
Representative
everything?
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, is it out of the delete everything amendment then?
Representative Kahn, we're working on the delete everything.
I know. I did see it in the other one.
All right. No. Members, let's work off the delete everything.
Okay.
I don't think it's in there anymore.
All right. Mr. Shepard will just take a look to see if it's there and we don't see it right offhand. And further discussion. Ms. Dunn, do you wish to respond?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out that the implementation timeline for this would be 2011, and so we're looking at effectively from this point on almost 5 years before of time, given the 36-month in the delete all, which would give hotels a number of years, in fact, to get out of a contract.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is either for Ms. Dunn or Mr. Jewell, I guess. I'm wondering whether you believe that there will be a cost here to the state in the sense that someone, presumably from the Department of Administration or someone at some state agency, would have to review these policies to make sure that they were consistent with the statute. In other words, a policy starting on line 1.19 of the delete everything, there would have to be someone, it seems to me, that would screen to make sure that they had policies that dealt with sexually explicit work, with depictions of sexual conduct that objectifies and exploits its subject by eroticizing domination, degradation, or violence. Can you tell me what kind of role, if any, you envision for the state?
Mr. Chair.
All right. Ms. Dunn, you want to respond?
There would be a negligible cost, we believe. When we balance that against the kind of far-reaching effect this might have in terms of creating an understanding about the environment which supports sexual violence, we see that that cost might be more negligible than other measures that we would ultimately hope the state could take.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if there's someone here from the Department of Administration or another state agency who might be able to speak to the possible requirement of state resources to implement this.
Representative Simon, I believe, is... I believe we do. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, member, my name is Kent Allen. I'm the Chief Procurement Officer for the state of Minnesota and the Department of Administration. Actually, we had not intended to put in any sort of fiscal note with respect to the delete all version of the bill. An earlier version had the state paying as much as a 20% premium to stay in a hotel room that didn't have this type of pornography. That was deleted. And this version will require a bit of administrative action on the part of my agency. We would presumably be relying on essentially self-certification from the vendors. We could put language in the contract documents that asks them if they have these types of policies. If they say yes, we would believe them unless we had reason not to. So we wouldn't intend to put any state time into monitoring, certainly not watching pornography to decide if we thought it passed the test or not.
Thank you. Representative Simon.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is for Ms. Dunn or Mr. Jewell, and it's a serious question. This seems to me to be aimed at obviously changing business practices, not changing state employee consumption of any kind. I assume there are already regulations in place, or there are certainly rules, if not laws, that say that a state employee on state time with state money can't be a user of this material. I assume that's the case. So I assume that's already taken care of, that this bill is more about changing business practices. Is that true?
Ms. Dunn.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is in fact the case. And again, I would like to say that we really don't see the hotel industry as the problem. We're really talking about the infusion of pornography and the availability of pornography readily being readily available in hotels as the issue.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, I guess the follow-up question would be this, and I'm not a big believer in the slippery slope argument. Mm-hmm. Too many people around here make that. Well, if we do this, then the floodgates are going to open. We draw lines all the time around here. So I'm not accusing you of, mm-hmm. of opening the door to all sorts of nonsense necessarily, but I guess the question I would ask, you talk about sexual violence as a public health problem, mm-hmm. mostly, it yes. seems to me. Are there any other public health problems which you think would mandate the same kind of legislation? For example, and we draw lines all the time, so feel free to draw one here. What if we decided as a state that we don't want to encourage fatty foods, and we want hotels, for the sake of public health, to swear off serving fried chicken or chocolate layer cake at their hotel facilities? And I'm being serious. Is there any other legislation? Where should we draw the line? Should we do this for other public health problems or not? And maybe you want to draw the line here. That's fine. We do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Dunn.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the only other public health problem I would think about in terms of this kind of action would be the anti-smoking measures that we have taken through policy in Minnesota. And I think we identified that is legal activity, but we've decided that from a public policy and a public health standpoint, we had a right to draw that line, and that's in the framework of this initiative.
Further discussion to the bill as amended. Anyone else wish to testify? Seeing no other testifiers and no other discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3287 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, nay.
Nay.
No.
There being no audible nays or no audible yeas, the bill does not pass and it will remain in the committee. Representative Haas, I would suggest, given what's happened here, that this bill needs some work. So we'll have to hold it and work on it for the time being.
Mr. Chair, thank you, committee members. I would say that I will tell the people that are working on this bill to get with the hotel industry. But I want to also tell you, as an individual leader, as an individual coach, as an individual teacher, I stand up when I see something wrong. And I tell my students and my athletes to do the same. Individually, you can do that. But collectively, you can also do that. And you can change the norms. But it does take courage. Thank you for hearing us today.
Thank you. Representative Champion was here, and Did he just duck out? Can you, is he just out there?
He's right outside.
All right. Representative Champion, I'm going to move that House File 3184 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee with my understanding it's got to go to State Government Finance.
So, Mr. Chair, that's my understanding as well.
Representative Champion, to your bill.
And Mr. Chair, is it possible to move also the delete all amendment? I think you are.
Representative Champion, I'm going to move 2365, A10 2365. So that motion is before us. Why don't you tell us what it does, and then we'll act on the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the amendment does is, number one, in Section 1, you see that it says that anyone who's going to utilize bond proceeds must as a part of any bid or proposal for a contract or agreement from any business, must submit a plan. And that plan is to do a number of things. One is to recruit individuals unemployed, especially in communities that have a disproportionately high rate of unemployment. It also, you know, identifies low-income, rural, tribal communities, and communities of color. Also, in that same section, it seeks to recruit individuals from training programs, from folks like OICs or Opportunities Industrialization Centers, as well as other places or spaces where there's great training that is happening, such as it with the construction trades unions as well. It also, in subdivision one, it also makes a requirement to disseminate information to subcontractors and talk about employment opportunities generated by the bond proceeds. Also in Section 2, it merely talks about recipients of bond proceeds shall submit electronically to the Commissioner of Deed a complete accounting of information that will be used in order to track and to open up notions of accountability when we think in terms of what exactly happened. And finally, in that same subdivision, Deed will compile or ask that Deed compiles the information and submit it to the legislature with jurisdiction over capital investments and the Department of Management and Budget. The whole idea is that when we think in terms of moving this as a jobs bill, we just want to make sure with an intentional plan that it reflects all of the segments of our wonderful state and not just certain segments of it. And so that's what the delete all amendment does, Mr. Chair, and I ask that that the committee will approve this or adopt this amendment.
All right, Representative Champion, we have another amendment to be handed out, and I think we'll let that be handed out. Representative Champion, I believe this is your amendment, and it's not his amendment. It's Representative Sterner's amendment. All right, let's get the amendment before us before we discuss it. And then. All right. Members, while that's being done, we have not acted on the delete everything, so let's put the bill in the order that it should be in, and then we can address Representative Sterner's amendment. So all those in favor of the delete everything amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Then Representative Sterner, to your amendment, which is the A10-2383?
Yes, that's correct, Chair Pawlowski. Yeah, the amendment was just basically my legislative district includes the Red Bulls headquarters in my district, and their unemployment is at 3 times the rate, and many times veterans do have some of these same challenges, maybe in people of colors or lower income. And I also know several disabled persons in my district that are having trouble finding employment as well. So I was just hoping I could add these persons to the the bill as much, and I did talk to Representative Champion. I think it would be okay, but I'll let Representative Champion speak for
Representative
himself.
Sterner moves the amendment, Representative Champion, to the Sterner amendment.
Mr. Chair, I have had an opportunity to talk to Representative Sterner about the amendment, and we are in agreement with the amendment. We think it's appropriate, and we are looking at ways by which to make sure all are able to participate.
All right. Any further discussion to the Sterner amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. All right. Representative Champion, two-year bill is amended.
Mr. Chair, if I might have a couple testifiers, and we know that brevity is the order of the day, and so we're going to move expeditiously through our testimony.
Right.
I'm going to ask first for Mr. Jeff Bauer, who's with Higher Minnesota.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Jeff Bauer. I'm the Director of Public Policy at a nonprofit organization called Family and Children's Service. I'm one of the oldest nonprofits in the state and also a proud member of the Higher Minnesota Coalition. Very briefly, Higher Minnesota Coalition came together in late 2008. We're a coalition of just over 70 organizations and a few thousand people across Minnesota. And we came together for one reason in late 2008, and that was to make sure that public investments in renewable energy projects and infrastructure projects in Minnesota did three things. The first thing is to create good jobs with family-supporting wages. The second is to reduce current disparities in hiring and contracting practices. And the third is to build healthier communities for all of us. And so some of you on this committee I know last year remember quite well. We worked on House File 680 and Senate File 657 quite a bit. And those bills were determining the use of federal stimulus dollars in Minnesota as they relate to energy projects. The result of that was a bill that was signed into law last session that included almost all of the language you see before you today in the Delete All Amendment. So this is not new language. Most of it made it through many, many committees last session and is now law, but only law as it pertains to the use of those federal stimulus dollars. And so we're here today in full support of this bill as it relates to bonding funds, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that committee members have.
All right. Representative Kahn.
What was the result of applying this to the federal stimulus dollars then? Have there been reports? Have there been increased hiring? Has there been what looks as if it's the same language that they must have, there must be reports that that related to the federal stimulus dollars?
Ms. Bauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn. We are just now receiving the first of those reports several weeks ago. As many of you know, the stimulus money has not moved quite as fast as some of us would have liked. And so those hiring reports are preliminary reports. However, the categories of things they are reporting on are the same as here, Representative Kahn, and they've already been helpful to see exactly what's happening with that hiring.
What?
Representative Kahn.
What is happening?
Mr. Bauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn. Some of the agencies are doing better than others, but what it has allowed us to do now is to see areas where this is going well and share those practices with other areas, and also to see areas that need a little help with us. And so the preliminary findings are mixed, but the use of this language as a tool to diversify the workforce has been, I would say, successful so far.
Representative Hilde.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not necessarily for this particular witness, perhaps for the author or any of the witnesses. I understand the intent of the bill, but it appears that if a plan is submitted, there isn't any particular requirement that it be followed or implemented, which may be one problem. And another is, I'm pretty sure that the intent here is that this would have an impact on the named groups within our state, but there doesn't seem to be any way. There is nothing in the bill, and there probably isn't any way to preclude that plan for recruiting individuals in these target groups from other states. And often we have seen, I mean, we're talking about contracts being let to contractors, mostly building contractors. Certainly had a lot of experience in the state of companies coming in from other states as far away as Texas and other places with crews that would probably qualify here. And also, there doesn't seem to be any kind of sanction if the plan that is developed is not implemented in any way. What happens?
Representative Champion. Okay. Can you identify yourself for the record? Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Lewis King, President and CEO of Summit Academy, OIC, and a member of HIRE Minnesota. Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, this represents a first step towards the new normal in terms of community participation in our construction projects in the state. The precedent set prior to this have been with the Minnesota Ballpark, Twins Ballpark, and the TCF Stadium, where community organizations and community members, and those two projects that were $400 million and $200 million respectively, help the contractor prepare the plan and also work with them throughout the course of the project to ensure that it was implemented and formed a true partnership. The intent is not to be punitive. The sad truth is there are already laws on the books. There are already rules in place, but we struggle to implement them. We struggle to enforce them. Some of our departments will say that they're understaffed. This amendment that speaks to veterans, I too am a veteran. Freedom isn't free. Economic freedom isn't free, and equal opportunity and economic opportunity is not free. So we're here as a community, as training organizations and advocates. We used to sit on the sidelines and only show up to protest when things were going bad or had gone wrong. Today we are negotiating with MnDOT to change their rules. This is not an attempt to bring more punitive measures into play. Those things and enforcement measures already exist. Rather, Representative Hilty, this gets to the frustration encountered as we've spoken to people who will be the recipients of these funds, who you go to one department and they send you to another department. That department sends you back to the first department. You then speak to a third department and say, what is the workforce plan? They tell you that they follow the path of the first department, and then in the end say that if there are no federal dollars involved, and this is an actual quote, then their role of enforcement is not there, that the goals are there, but after that they don't have any obligation by statute. This is an attempt to get everyone on the same page. Our contractor friends, if they do work with the Met Council, have to do this type of thing. If they do work with MnDOT as we get through our negotiation projects, this will become the norm also. And we've already demonstrated it with major projects in the Twin Cities. This is not about being punitive. It's not about creating more work. It's about making sure that all Minnesotans have the opportunity to participate, and we all have the responsibility to ensure that that is achieved.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, my concern here is on line 1.12 of the amendment refers to the bond proceeds recipient. I presume that that means that this is would be, for instance, a contractor to whom a contract has already been let. If that's not the case, I think that there might need to be some clarification in the language to suggest that when you want this plan submitted is with the bid and not by a recipient.
Am Representative I Champion.
Something?
Representative Champion or Mr. King?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, from our perspective, or the perspective of the legislation, is not just the contractor loan, but I think, and it is reflected here, that before bond proceeds a bond proceeds recipients receive, well, once they receive them, such as a state agency, for an example, that they have a plan as well, and that they intentionally require, if you look at 1.13, that the bond proceeds recipient must require, as a part of any bid or contract, a bid or proposal for a contract, an agreement from any business, a plan to do these things, so that there's some accountability and transparency from point A all the way through the process itself. As Mr.
Representative Champion, I'm going to just break in for a second. Mr. Shepard may be able to answer Representative Hilty's question.
Okay.
So, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, Representative Champion, I just wanted to point out that in Representative Champion's amendment, bond proceeds recipient is defined to include the agency. It's the public entity, the agency, MNSCU, or the University of Minnesota. It would not be the, as defined here, it would not be the individual contractor.
All right. I have Representative Hilty, do you have another question?
Then that would mean that it did not include the individual contractor at all?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, and I defer to Representative Champion if I'm saying something that's not his intent, but as I read this, the bill requires the bond proceeds recipient to do the recruitment, the dissemination of information, and that would include only the agency, the public agency, MNSCU, University of Minnesota, that's receiving the money.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, let's let Representative Hilty, because it was his question. Is that clarified?
It does. Thank you, Mr.
All right.
Chair.
Representative Champion.
Just for clarity from my perspective as the author, Mr. Chair, is that one aspect of it is that the state agency understand that this is important and that they have a plan, but it also requires, as they seek others to contract with or do things with, that those individuals also demonstrate that there is a plan from a contracting to subcontracting level in order to recruit and also reach out to others as well.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn earlier asked about the results of this similar language being included in the energy stimulus bill, and I just wanted to share with her a couple of points. One, I think that as we heard from the legislative auditor on workforce development and training, that we have been doing lots of redundant training and overlapping and competing with public dollars in many parts of our workforce development plan and the programs we fund, that one of the strengths of HIRE's work in this area has been to be one of the catalysts working with the Office of Energy Security, with DEED and others, to finally start aligning our training both with the work opportunities as well as to make sure that those opportunities are accessible and are hopefully becoming less and less redundant, that we are having unique and needed training opportunities being met in the communities where the work opportunity is as well. So I think that's a real positive of their involvement on that end. A frustration that I've had is that not only Representative Kahn has DOE, have the feds really slowed down the delivery of dollars and job creation, but I think that that we need to be a little bit more thoughtful, and I think we need to hear from admin and the cities on this about the expense and whether what's the most efficient way to make sure that we're achieving the goals that we want, which is to make sure that everybody succeeds from economic opportunities, that it's not just targeted to the status quo and the way we've done things, but that we're not, out of a desire to move the ball forward, making things more difficult. And so I have some concerns about the cost of the reporting pieces, and enforcement costs money. It's important to make sure we're following the law, but we have to make sure we're not just providing a hammer that turns out to be a Nerf hammer rather than an actual tool that can get us to that fairness that we want.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Champion.
Representative Kalin, I think that you brought up some interesting points. Just so that you know, that I have had an opportunity to at least converse with the League of Minnesota Cities, and we have agreed that we would talk a little further about language and just to make sure that the information is streamlined, as well as with the Minnesota Counties Association, where we have also talked that we're going to meet even after this session, if this bill does go forward, to tweak language so we can make sure that the desired outcome is the order of the day and that we're not putting on them any unnecessary burden in real time. And so we have addressed those issues, and we'll make sure if it goes from here to Representative Kahn's committee that those issues will be clarified and also all put on the table.
All right, Representative Kahn.
Just thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't, Representative Champion, hear you mention the Department of Administration. I think that they're as the lead contractors for these projects and for the dissemination of these funds, as I understand it, that you need to be engaged with them as well. I'd hope that they'll actually speak today if they have concerns.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Champion.
Representative Kahlen, I have not had an opportunity to speak with the Department of Administration, but that is a part of my commitment to make sure that they're involved in this discussion. Also, I did have a conversation with the Department of Economic of Employment and Economic Development as well. They have some concerns as it pertains to the reporting and how to best do that in light of the resources that they have. And our continued commitment is to look at the language, look at the responsibilities, and how can we best balance the both important interests. And so we will continue to do that, and I think that you raised some important issues.
All right, members, there are 7 other bills on the agenda, and this bill, should it prevail today, is going to finance and then state government finance. Representative Gutwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pass.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question about line 2.5 that talks about energy savings. It seems to be out of context with this bill, and I also have concerns about the cost to a variety of entities here, the least of which is our state agencies and local governments, but also the private sector in a lot of these costs, so I'm glad it's going to be looked at. But initial question right now is the energy savings. Seems a little bit out of place here. Maybe you can explain that.
Meyer, are you working on the delete everything amendment or the bill?
Yes.
No. All right.
Yes.
All right. Representative Kiffmeyer, if the language is in the delete everything. It is in the lead, everything.
Different line.
1.26.
All right. So let's just clarify where the question is. It's 1.26.
What? I agree, too.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, is it the language that's on 2.15?
All right. No, that's okay. Representative Champion, let's go back to Representative Kiffmeyer again, and let's get the 2 lines that she's concerned about. Do you have them, Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yes, I do now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is on both 2 places, 1.26 and on also 2.15 that I can see for right now.
All right. Representative Champion.
Mr. Chair, I would like to defer that question to Mr. Bauer.
All right, Mr. Bauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, the renewable energy language in this bill is reflective of part of the overall mission of Higher Minnesota. The RE in our name is renewable energy, and that reflects a commitment not only to create jobs, but to create green jobs, jobs that create energy savings. That's why those lines are in there.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does that mean this goes to the Energy Committee then?
Well, right now the motion is to send it to finance with the intent to go to state government finance. That's where it's going now.
Mr.
So, Representative Kahlen.
Mr. Chair, I think it might be helpful. I know Representative Kiffmeyer doesn't serve on the Energy Committee and probably doesn't know that there's an existing requirement for all bond proceeds, all vertical construction. I think it's major renovation over 5,000 or 10,000 square feet. I can't remember which. 10,000 square feet or new construction has to perform at 30% more efficient than the existing energy code. It's already, I think it was a 2001 or 2003 provision that that this data actually has to be provided already in accordance with other laws and our guidelines for bonding. I think that we will have to ask this question about whether this is a hurdle and an extra cost or whether this merely is reporting information that's already available. And I'm happy to, I know that there are experts in the audience who could follow up with you offline to share more information about how they do that.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Champion,
I understand and appreciate the worthy goal that you've articulated in this legislation, but I think there are a couple of real problems with the bill. First, I don't see anything in here that indicates who or how the adequacy of a plan is determined. Who's going to make that determination, whether it's adequate or not? What are they going to be the criteria for determining adequacy? Without that information, it seems to me we're opening up bond recipients to the possibility of legal challenges. And I think that's a serious problem. The second problem has to do with, I don't see any recognition of variations in conditions around the state. I certainly understand that it's quite different from your district, from your community, than it is from mine. Our unemployment is among the lowest in the nation. And we have different populations in different parts of the state. And I don't see any accounting for variations in conditions around the state. And the question would be then, is everybody going to be held to the same standard in terms of how adequate their plan might have to be?
Representative Champion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lansing, to your last question first, I believe that this bill does provide that variation. If you look, for instance, in Section 1, Subdivision 1, even under, starting at 1.5, it says recruit individuals to perform work who are unemployed, especially targeting communities experiencing disproportionately high rates of unemployment, but not limited to low income, rural, tribal communities, and communities of color. And now we have the amendment around veterans. It does provide that, it does provide a variation and for people to look at where you are and the circumstances by which this particular work is planned to be done in. And so I think it does provide that. And we were intentional because we understand that Minnesota is very rich and very diverse. All of our circumstances may be slightly different. But if we have the same common goal, which is to make sure that every fabric of our society is working and enjoying these revenue streams, that is our intended goal, and we have to have a plan to meet that desired outcome. To your second, well, your first question, but I'm answering it second, when you talked about the adequacy of the plan and who decides, I think that's the charge of the respective places such as the University of Minnesota, MNSCU, and others, and there is existing state law. And so they can look at the adequacy by testing it or comparing it to what is the state law and using that as the well from which to draw from. And I don't think that the past use of the very language that we have here that was signed into law causes any legal challenges, any of the concerns that you raised. I think they're important concerns that you've raised. But I think this has been tried and tested, and therefore it is appropriate, and I would hope that we could get your support going forward.
Representative Gutwald.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Champion, you know, these are more than just minor concerns. I don't want to disparage what you're trying to do with the bill. I think it's obvious what you're trying to do with the bill. But we are further and further and further tying the hands of people in a legitimate process of distributing bond funds for what a community may or may not want to do. Now, the issues that Representative Lanning just raised are very important, both the challenges from a legal perspective as well as the applications statewide. There are communities that would have a very difficult time meeting these requirements, not because they don't want to, but because demographics dictate. This is pretty remarkable. I mean, we could be adding to this list endlessly and be tying the hands of future state legislatures. We're tying the hands of state government. We're tying the hands of local governments to do what they need to do. And we're kind of assuming that they're not going to do it without this statutory direction, which from a good government perspective concerns me a bit. When we start getting so explicit and so directional about how bonding funds are used, you know, that it almost raises the question, why doesn't the state just create the program to build these things instead of offering bonding money to people? It's too prescriptive. That would be my argument. And that's a good government comment. It's not a slam against any of the groups you've got listed in this bill. I would object to this if it were prescriptive to this extent in any other direction.
Mr. Chair?
Sam Chairman.
Thank you so much, Representative, for your articulated concerns, but I think that there are a couple of things that I think are important. One is viewing this as a guiding principle and for us to tap into our Minnesota values. Our Minnesota values seem to suggest to me is that inclusion and fostering inclusion are things that we must do. But we must do those things intentionally. How do we do those things intentionally without a plan, without some guidance? And it's not very prescriptive because we didn't lay out the plan. We didn't say exactly what it has to be in various aspects of the state. We said, here are things for you to consider. We hope that a plan to speak to these particular things. And so when we think in terms of tying one's hands, I don't think that we've done that at all. But I think that we're in a unique position where we must weigh and balance things. We must weigh and balance our need to make sure that every fabric of our society is included when we think in terms of revenue-generating opportunities that is going to improve their quality of life, while simultaneously balancing that with the realization that there are limited resources, that there are things that are going on. And when you think in terms of good government and us doing a great job, I believe that we've done good, but we can always do better. When we think in terms of goals and when we think in terms of making sure that every fabric of our society has been included, we have not done the best job there, but this is just an attempt to help foster that and move us forward so all of our quality of life is improved.
All right, Representative Gebel, before you respond, Senate file 2602, which is number 9 on the agenda, the request has been to remove it. So if there's anyone here waiting for that bill, that's been removed from the agenda. Representative Gebel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll make it brief. I just want members to understand, I mean, in this legislation, as amended, we still have the words shall and require, which is as prescriptive as you can possibly get in statute. And the list of things goes on and on. I again, Representative Champion, understand what you're trying to do with this bill, and I don't discredit that at all. But the assumption is that we don't, you know, if we're here to legislate every single thing that somebody would do, right or wrong, there would be no end to the legislation we would pass. I think we have to assume at some point that local units of government are going to do the right thing, they're representative just like we are, and that the right thing can be done without this kind of prescription.
All right. I have two more members that wish to make a statement, and then I have one more person who wants to testify that is not at the table. So, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess mine is more of a statement because I just want to thank you, Representative Champion. We've worked together on this issue for a while, and I want the members of the committee to know, especially from a transportation perspective, that you know there is a lot of talk about doing this, but then there's not a lot of action. And so we've had concerns about prescriptive language, but the whole problem that as I perceive it, is that we've had language that isn't prescriptive enough. So we have goals for, you know, DBEs and others. But then if it's just simply a goal, we've had many public agencies, federal down to MnDOT, not really stepping up and doing their job. So I think this is really needed. I thank you for bringing this forward. I think this complements some of the work that's been done already, you know, particularly in the transportation sector, and I'd encourage people to support it.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Champion, as this bill moves forward, I think I would like to reiterate the concern by Representative Kiffmeyer. I think, Representative Champion, in your desire to appease too many stakeholders, we might have a bill in front of us right now that is unconstitutional. According to Article 4, Section 17 of the Constitution, no law shall embrace more than one subject which shall be expressed in its title. As I look at the title of your bill, we're talking about employment guidelines. Yet, as I look at line 1.25 and 6 and lines 2.14 and 2.15, those are not employment guidelines, and yet you're making a requirement to that. So I think you need to be cognizant. I think those two sections are misplaced in a piece of legislation dealing with employment guidelines. If green energy people want to bring forward a piece of legislation, they should do so. I just don't think it should be part of this piece of legislation.
Representative Kahn.
I just refer Representative Biskins to the title on the delete everything amendment. And you'll think his, he'll think, I think he'll see his statement
is misplaced. The title's on the back, the bottom. Yeah, members, we're working off the delete everything again, so that would be helpful. I have a Tim Werke that wishes to testify. Welcome to the committee. Come on down. And please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good morning. My name is Tim Werke. I represent the Associated General Contractors of Minnesota. We're a trade association of some 475 general contractors, subcontractors, and affiliate members in the state. I want to first start by thanking Representative Champion and apologizing to him that we have come a little late to the game on this bill, and he has been receptive to listening to our concerns and allowing us to provide some testimony today. I want to be brief, because I think a lot of the questions that have been brought forward by the members around the table are issues that I would have raised in my testimony. But let me specifically relate my comments to the delete all in the section that begins on lines 1.12, because I think our greatest concern, and I think I would like to lead by saying for us, words on paper are important because they help our members determine how to approach proposals and bidding and how they are treated in a fair and objective manner from owners in terms of proposals and in terms of bidding, et cetera. And when the words are listed there that as a part of any bid or proposal, that's a gate through which, a filter through which those proposals must be vetted. And our concern, I think, number one, is who determines if a plan that is submitted by a prospective contractor is sufficient? And is the owner in this case, whether it's Minsky or the U of M or eventually the counties and cities or municipalities, is the owner charged with making that determination? And under what authorities or under what guidelines will they be making those determinations? And it's important for our members to know that so that they just don't bid work in the city of Winona. They just don't bid work for the U of M. They bid work across the state, and they, consistency in approach is important. So I would say that. And then secondly, can the contracting authority disqualify a bidder from bidding because they haven't met the terms and conditions of that plan? And these are things that I think need to be addressed or worked out. I would also say another question we would have is the general contractor responsible for the plans submitted by the subs? In a lot of cases, especially work at some of the larger higher ed institutions, it's a contract manager, and they don't necessarily perform the work, but they hire all manner and fashion of subcontractors. So who's responsible for that? I would also point out to the committee, our concern is that is this somewhat duplicative, additive, yes or no, some of each, in terms of the state human rights legislation with requiring for certificates of compliance in terms of having an affirmative action plan on file. Right now, anyone that bids work, I think it's in excess of $100,000, or if they have 40 or more employees, are required to have a certificate, an approved certificate on file as a condition of whether or not they can bid. So I think some of these things they can bid. So I think some of these things that are brought forward in the legislation, as the committee has stated, are absolutely laudable goals and laudable objectives that we should sit down and work through with our partners here at this table and some that may not be here. I just raise these issues in concert with some of the questions that the committee has raised. And with that, I would just stand for any questions.
All right. Representative Kalin, did you want to respond to something?
No,
okay, you're on. All right. Any other questions? All right. Representative Champion?
Mr. Chair.
Any final comments?
I would encourage you all to support this bill, and I would like to end my comments by allowing Mr. Trent Miller to wrap it up for us.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Trent Miller. I'm a student at Summit Academy, and I'm a part of the 100 Hard Hats program. I'm studying pre-apprentice carpentry and weatherization, OSHA 10, HAZWOPR certification, and, you know, we take, like, job classes to get us prepared to enter the work field, and also social skills to even, like, hold these jobs. So as far as, like, I heard someone make a comment about the redundancy of these programs, and, like, the program that we're, the stuff that we're learning is, like, all the things that are coming into the future. So I'll just stand on that note.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. You know, I just was approached with this bill yesterday, and all of the bond proceed recipients here, I don't know how they stand, how Minsky stands, how the county stand, how the city stand. Do we have positions, or are we, I mean, there's just a lot of information out here. I just don't know.
Well, I know how Linda stands.
None have come forward, so I have no idea where anyone stands. And
Representative Marquardt, the individuals who wish to testify in the bill have all testified at this point.
Mr. Chair, can I just say one
Representative
thing?
Champion.
As I mentioned earlier, Representative, I did have some discussion with the League of Minnesota Cities, Counties Association, and we are going to work on their concerns going forward, especially if it passes here and goes to state finance. Also, I have renewed that commitment also with AGC, and I'm going to also reach out to the Department of Administration. I did also talk to Deed, and so there were some small tweaks of things that they wanted to have have represented differently in the bill, and that's what I can say, and I believe that it's okay for us to go forward and work with those groups, because there is still another stopgap.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 3184, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee with the understanding it would go to State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nope. No.
Motion prevails. Representative Marquardt, now you're up.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the division report.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any
aye.
Opposed, nay? Motion prevails. Representative Marquardt, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I think this bill will be going to environmental finance, I believe.
So the motion is to finance with the understanding that it would then go to environmental finance and natural resources.
That's correct.
It's going to go to finance, and they'll re-refer it from there.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. What this bill does, House File 2894, would allow watershed districts throughout the state to be able to carry $2 million in loans, which is up from the $600,000 it can carry right now in loans. The reason for that is one of the major functions of a watershed district is to provide storage or impoundment projects that store water upstream that will lessen the impact of downstream communities and areas. What they need to do with these impoundment projects, which can be of size from 400 acres to 1,600 acres, is they need to get the land. They need to acquire the land. They need to do that quickly. And what this will do is not only allow them to adjust to the rising land prices, which has really spiked in just the last couple years, but also allow watershed districts to pursue these projects more aggressively. If you have any questions, I do have Ron Harnick, who's the project manager of the Red River Management Basin, and also Ray Bone, who's the administrator from the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, and this bill is one of their top priorities. So I'll stand for questions.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, Representative Marquardt, to your motion.
I would ask members to approve the motion, if they would.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did I hear you correct that land prices have spiked in the last couple years?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, you were there the other day at the property tax division hearing where you saw where just agricultural land went up 30% in the last year. So, yes, they have. In certain areas, you know, agricultural primarily, it has gone up.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Representative Marquardt, I'd like to invite you to Sherburne County and meet with some of my local landowners who would beg to disagree with you. And I would say, in general, that was a couple years ago, maybe, where you had corn and you had some other things going on, as was also testified to. So I would really beg to differ with you in that regard. The other thing is that in regards to just buying more and more land, I think Representative Rukavina and I share this, that we just constantly seeing more and more land being purchased by multitudes of entities, and now we're going to have another situation of authorizing more land. And this is not an elected body, these watershed districts, but now they have authority to raise taxes. I mean, a lot of my folks have just kind of had it up to here, and especially when it comes to land.
Maybe Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, the last year in Fargo-Moorhead, the Red River crested at 40.82 feet, an all-time record. If it goes much higher than that, there's a potential of a $6 billion property loss in the Fargo-Moorhead area. The projects that the watershed districts do in impoundment and acquiring land for those storage projects are invaluable to downstream communities. And so we can argue about acquiring land, but I think if you talk to communities downstream who are impacted by floods, these are very important projects.
Representative Gutwall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll keep it brief. Representative Marquardt, I realize we're not a finance committee, but as part of all our other discussion about this, does this have any local fiscal impact?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Gutwall, great question, because we wrestled with that a little bit, and the Department of Revenue says no. And the reason why is because certainly the debt service would be paid for by their levies. But almost, and Mr. Harnick could tell you this, almost every watershed district but a few, that they have a cap as to how much they can levy, and all of them are already at that cap. A few smaller ones aren't quite there. So it's negligible, and there'd be no impact like on property tax refund and so forth. So basically no levy impact.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quick. So the levy cap doesn't get moved. They're just simply allowed to have more. More bonded, well, not bonded indebtedness, but loans.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gutwall, that is correct. Does not impact their cap and levies.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Marquardt renews his motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
And opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Conan.
Mr. Chair.
Someone. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Nelson, Division Report.
This is 3327.
All right. Representative Nelson moves the Division Report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Division Report is adopted. Representative, where does this go? General Register. Representative Cohn, I'm going to move that House File 3327 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. So, to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. The current law requires cities and counties of more than 15,000 in population to annually notify its residents of the positions and base salaries of its three highest paid employees. What this bill does is change the statute by adding language that this not apply to employees of city-owned or county-owned hospitals. This was brought to me by the administrator of the Renville County Hospital, Glenn Haugo, and what he's concerned about is that in this case, the highest paid employees are actually doctors, and he does not, for the sake of trying to
hire doctors, he's worried about that having their wages published will kind of cause problems in, first of all, getting them to take a position at the hospital, and then also the could cause problems between doctors because they're not all paid the same. And so what this would do is just require those counties and cities to report on the employees in the courthouse or city hall, but would not include the hospitals.
All right. Representative Gutwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kinnon, is this information already public information? In other words, could a local newspaper already access this information and publish it if they chose to?
Representative Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In Renville County, and this is what I'm familiar with, there, if somebody calls and asks the administrator or one of the board members what a specific doctor gets paid, they do give that information out. What he's looking for here is just not is to not be required to have to publish that information.
Representative Gumball.
Oh, Mr. Chair, that wasn't quite my question, Representative. You know, your bill talks about requiring city or counties with a population over 15,000 to notify residents of the base salaries of its three highest paid employees. I'm not just talking about the hospitals. I question whether you should be excluding those in the first place, but my background is as a journalist, and I believe this information is already public information. Somebody should be able to go to the county or city and say, give me the salaries of your top three or top 10 or all of them and get that information and publish it if they want to. And my question obviously is going to, how badly do we need this? Do we already have mechanisms in place for public accountability?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the information is available. That's right. What the law requires is that it's a mandate that says that these top three salaries have to be published, and that's what they're looking for, is relief from that mandate that says they have to publish those.
Further discussion? Representative Kahn.
Wouldn't it make sense to just repeal the whole section? I mean, all this is public information. They are public. This was, I don't remember when this was put in, but it was obviously someone trying to make it easy for journalists, and I don't think we ought to make it easy for journalists. They can find this information if they want to do it. So why don't we, just instead of the exemption, why don't we repeal? I don't believe it. I agreed with Representative Biskins last week, and now I'm agreeing with Representative Gottwalt. Is that possible? But but I let me try that. But can I have a motion to repeal the change the bill to repeal the whole section?
Ms. Dyson, what would that entail? The amendment. This is an amendment.
Yes.
Or is it just a discussion?
No, it's an amendment.
It's a real amendment.
Yes.
All right, the con real amendment. That.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would be to delete everything after the enacting clause and insert Section 1 repealer, Minnesota Statute Section 471.701 is repealed. Amend the title accordingly.
Representative Cohen, you might want to speak to that amendment. It does change your bill a little.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kahn's amendment would actually take care of the concerns of the administrator at the Renville County Hospital. I'll just leave that to the committee.
All right. So to the Kahn amendment, all those in favor?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wish I could agree with Representative Kahn, but I'm going to oppose the amendment. I think this is... I actually was going to go the other way, Representative Kahn, and delete the words three highest paid. But I think for openness and transparency, this is a good law, and it should stay in the book.
Well, all right. Representative Kahn, you want to?
No.
No?
I good. Think everyone understands it.
All right. All those in favor of the Kahn amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. All right. So to the bill as not amended. Representative Cronin, you don't have anyone that you have to have testify in this one, do you?
No.
All right. Then I'll renew my motion that House File 3327 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion
no.
prevails. And the second bill we're deleting from the agenda.
Yes, thank right. you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Representative Smith, I think I saw him. There he is.
Mr. Chair, I'd like, to move the division report for House File 3350.
Moves the division report. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails. The division report is in front of us. Representative Smith, I will move that House File 3350 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Mr. Chairman.
So, two-year bill.
Mr. Chairman, there also is an A1 amendment arising from the previous hearing, which
I
would...
I will move the A1 amendment, and out of the courtesy to the author, let's put the amendment on so the bill's in shape, and then we'll discuss it after that's put on. So, to the A1 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So, Representative Smith, to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Very briefly, the bill as amended would prohibit full-time permanent city employees from serving on the city council in that city. The amendment arose after a hearing in Representative Nelson's, Chairman Nelson's committee. The amendment speaks to the issue of adding the word mayor to make it explicitly included in view of the statutory or charter language in our statutes. The second issue makes it clear that the state law applies to both individuals appointed and elected. Mr. Chairman, in closing, similar prohibitions already exist in Minnesota that prevent school district employees from serving on district school boards. Also, this bill has passed without the amendment in the Senate, is on the floor. I've spoken with the League of Minnesota Cities. In fact, Mr. Carlson from that group is here today. While they're not taking a position for the bill, they've reviewed it and they are not opposed to it. I have with me to answer questions or very brief testimony the mayor of Mound City, Minnesota, 9,700 population, west end of Hennepin County, Mayor Hannes, and also Council Member Ox.
All right. To the bill as amended, members, any discussion? Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the amendment, Representative Smith, after the discussion in committee. I'm still going to oppose the bill and ask the committee to do so as well, because I do believe that we should trust our voters to make an informed decision about who's on the ballot and what their status is, and that the call to serve sometimes very, very small, offices with very, very small and sometimes no pay or very small per diems, giving up a great amount of time shouldn't require that people give up their job. We have conflict of interest provisions in our law as well, and I think that these discussions are important, and I very much appreciate and empathize with the frustrations that we heard in committee. But I think that... that these conversations should come out during elections and that voters should make this decision.
Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of House File 3350 as amended being passed and placed on the general register signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee.
Representative Hornstein. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the division report.
Representative Nelson moves the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The division report is adopted. Representative Hornstein, you want to move your bill?
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 3591, recommend to pass, and send to the general register.
All right. Representative Hornstein, to you.
And I also have an A2 amendment, Mr. Chair, that I'd like to incorporate it into the bill.
Well, why don't you move the A2 amendment?
Okay. And Mr. Chair, I move the A2 amendment.
All right. Why don't you tell us what it does?
Okay. This is simply the City of Minneapolis. This is enabling legislation for the City of Minneapolis, and they have a system of ordinances rather than resolutions for this type of activity. So this just clarifies that.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. So, Representative Hornstein, to your...
Thank you, Mr. Amendment. Chair. And as I mentioned, members, this is just simply enabling legislation to permit the city of Minneapolis to have a little bit more flexibility in terms of regulating mobile food units. Right now, there's a 21-day maximum set in statute. And the goal of this is to really encourage more active street life in the city downtown, particularly now with the new stadium. And we have many other examples of vibrant street life as a result of food vendors. And this just gives the city of Minneapolis the ability to regulate that in a little more flexible way. And I have Doug Kress, who is involved in this legislation, who is from the city of Minneapolis, works for Councilmember Goodman, and can explain more about the bill.
We have Representative Kiffmeyer wishes to ask a question.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative. Just wondering, why only Minneapolis? This seems like a good thing for the whole state.
Yeah, Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer. I agree, but in this situation, we're looking at just allowing the city to do this because they've expressed a very strong interest in moving proactively on it. And boy, I imagine maybe next session we can come back and make it statewide. But today, we're just looking at the city of Minneapolis.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, that sounds to me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That. Maybe we could do that, and why not? Why should we wait for next year? We have a business issue right now. We certainly need people to be active in their businesses, and this might be good for the whole state. I don't know where this bill is going next, but if there would be any such of amendment that could be suggested.
Representative Kiffmeyer, the motion is to the General Register.
That's why I'm bringing it up here. So we might consider maybe there might be an amendment here that Ms. Dyson could...
Well, Representative Kiffmeyer, I think Representative Hornstein has indicated he wants the bill narrowly focused to Minneapolis and does not wish to carry a statewide bill. But I may have misinterpreted his answer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I really appreciate the support, Representative Kiffmeyer, and I know what the chair's. I respect the chair's advice to all of us about doing amendments on the fly and. Certainly, probably not appropriate now because it's fairly complex issue. But I would like to work with you if there's a way to craft something before we go further down the road. I'd like to do that. But for the purposes of this committee at this time, I'd prefer that we keep it narrowly focused.
Reb Sim Gawal.
But I wouldn't be opposed to down the road. Yeah. Oh, you know what, Mr. Chair? Here's the reason. Here's the reason.
Representative Hornstein.
I think there are issues with the state health department that we may want to look at doing it statewide. So I was just informed of that. So I knew there was a good reason to keep
it's
it
there. It's a good thing there's one responsible person at the table. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, has this gone through the Health Policy Committee?
Representative Horns.
No, just local government and our committee here.
Well, Mr. Chair,
the
Commissioner of Health actually handles these licenses, and I wonder if it would be appropriate. I'm not trying to do anything to the bill, but I do wonder if it shouldn't have gone to one of the health committees because we've seen similar legislation pass through that committee.
Representative Horns.
Mr. Chair, Representative Godwell, there have been conversations with the health department and the city of Minneapolis. The chair of the health department didn't ask for it, so I feel satisfied that any health concerns have been addressed.
All right. Further discussion? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it just seems as though with that testimony that if the health department has an MV-12 of Minneapolis, Minneapolis is probably the hotbed of, you know, these kinds of things. I don't know how this could possibly be a problem for the rest of Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Representative Hornstein, you really want to answer that?
I think we've addressed that, but I really do appreciate your support.
I don't know if I can support it if so limited.
All right, seeing no further questions, all those in favor of the Hornstein motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed,
aye.
Nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Nelson. Representative Nelson, you want to move the division report?
Mr. Chair, first I'd like to move the division report for House
Representative
File
Nelson 30. Moves the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Representative Nelson, what do you want to do with your bill?
This should go to the General Register.
Representative Nelson moves the bill to the General Register. To your bill.
Mr. Chair, what this bill does is it's enabling legislation to allow Hennepin County to use the advanced or energy forward pricing to purchase fuels for their fleet of vehicles and for their energy needs. This is currently in statute. The state of Minnesota has this, and the Met Council has this, and the language in the bill, other than the amendment that was put in the last committee, deals with, is identical to what the Met Council already has, and it allows the county to be able to smooth out their energy purchases, the price of it, you know, the volatility of the fuel prices going up a dime when they're using 800,000 gallons of fuel in a month already, you know, in a year, that can really blow their budget. So what this allows them to do is buy this purchase this fuel and hedge on the price and hopefully smooth out their budget and hopefully save money for the residents of the county of Minnesota, or Hennepin County. And to the question that Representative Kiffmeyer asked about the previous one, why we're not doing it statewide, as I asked that question when I got the bill, and the thing is that other smaller counties would have to pool together to do this, where the Hennepin County is large enough to do this on their own. And with that, I have Mr. Geiske here from the Department of Director of Public Works for Hennepin County to answer any questions.
Representative Gutwell.
Mr. Chair, and to the author and testifier, my understanding is this has been tried before by the state of Minnesota, and while it's an innovative idea using kind of a free market approach, my understanding is the state has lost money doing this as well. When we're looking at energy assistance, we want to be careful with every dollar, of course. So there's always the chance when you're purchasing forward that you would lose as well as gain. And I guess, you know, I'd ask you to respond to that.
Representative Nelson.
In a hedge fund, yes, there's always that possibility to lose as well as gain. But the idea is that they'd be able to do this. They wouldn't have to do it all the time. If they could see prices are going up, they could purchase fuel ahead. They can't purchase more than they're going to use in the time period. And so there's safeguards in here. Like I said, currently Met Council uses this, and they've saved money, and they've helped them smooth out their budget and give them some predictability in what their budgets going forwards are.
Representative Gutwell.
Real quickly, Mr. Chair, like I said, the state lost $250,000 the last time it did this kind of thing. It's innovative, like I said, it's not a bad idea, but you do, even under the circumstances you described, have the potential for losing money as well as gaining it, and speculating with precious dollars in that area, I think, is probably not a good idea.
All right, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Maurice Giske. I'm director for Hennepin County Public Works. Thank you, Chair and members. To answer your question, when you enter into a hedge fund agreement, there is a chance that you're going to buy these commodities at less than what you're going to pay at market price at some point in the future. There's an equal chance also that you're going to buy commodities at a lesser amount. And what we do over time is that we dollar cost average as we're purchasing these commodities. So in other words, for a given month's use, you generally wouldn't buy more than 5 or 10% of that particular month's use at a point in time. And then over several months or even a year, you'd be buying into the market. So certainly there is that risk. I think if we go back to 2008, where we saw a peak in fuel prices, and then the subsequent crash, certainly there were some hedge funds that did not do very well as a result of that one-time event. I do have a statement here I'd like to go through, if I may.
We're running over time now.
Okay.
So unless it's absolutely critical, I would hope we could just stay to the bill.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I just have to speak up for greater Minnesota. I think our folks out there are really pooling seems like a good idea. We've been fostering methods by which counties can work together and relate to each other, and I think they deal with a lot of energies out there, and so it just seems like we keep carving out these little special things for Minneapolis and Hennepin County, and once again, it seems like, you know, I'm just want to say Greater Minnesota could have this same kind of advantage, and I think they could work out all these details as well. Yes, there's risk for Hennepin and Greater Minnesota, so just not sure why we're always not including Greater Minnesota.
All right. Representative Nelson, I don't see any more discussion or testifiers, so your motion.
My motion is to the House pile 3359 to pass and be referred to the General Register.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Members, meeting is adjourned.